Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I have with me in the studio, Ken Workowski. Ken, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Ken Workowski. Been a local here for 40 years now, raised our family here, built a homestead, been a woodworker for 50 years, I guess it's been. Well, basically my adult life. I guess I was a carpenter when I first started out, in my teen years. So yeah, we've built a homestead from scratch, done it all ourselves. I'm a wood weirdo. I just am fascinated with odd pieces of wood, unique pieces of wood. I just find the movement, the flow that they have just speaks to me, and enjoy the challenge of trying to figure out what am I gonna build into this? Mm-hmm. So, been doing that for a long time, and it's still evolving is the thing that really strikes me curious. Had you told me even 5 or 10 years ago that I would still be learning and getting better at what I do, I might have doubted it, but it's been interesting. Sometimes I feel like I'm 74 years old, but I'm not sure I've done my best work yet, and I find that stimulating and motivating.
Yeah.
So it's been a fun ride.
That's a really cool statement to make. I think something that we can all aspire to in certain aspects of our lives, right?
Yeah, I would hope so.
Striving to do our best work.
Yeah, and yeah. Learning. I think our society, our culture, as we're growing up, kind of, what would be the word, make us think in a way that isn't true, and especially in the way of aging. You know, you're born and you're an infant, and then you're a toddler, and you go through puberty, then you go through your teen years, and then you become an adult.
Yeah.
The rest of your life.
And there it is.
Right, and it kind of makes you think, well, yeah, it's all the same, but no, life just keeps evolving.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a fascinating aspect of life.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really astute because if I think back to myself as an 18-year-old, legally an adult, right? And I think about myself now.
Yeah.
I mean, these are two different people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. They're not even the me at 18 and the me now are just completely.
Yep. And 20 years from now, you'll be saying, geez, if I think back to when I was 20 years ago, I'm a whole different person.
Yeah. So I want to go back to something that you said earlier. And you're talking about how you enjoy working with, like, weird pieces of wood. Yeah. And, you know, we had a conversation last year on this podcast, and I think we talked about the way that you work with odd-shaped pieces. But I don't know that it struck me in the same way that it strikes me now that, you know, most woodworkers are looking for the opposite of what you're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're trying to build something out of wood, you're looking for the straightest grain, the least number of knots, the least number of whorls, you know. Yeah. You're looking for, you know, uniformity so that you can you can put those pieces together. But you're looking for the opposite. And, can you just expound on that a little bit?
I guess it begins with just the fascination and of looking. I don't know. I don't imagine everybody feels that way. But when I see beautifully shaped branches on trees, trunks swaying, you know, and kind of the opposite of your typical thing being a straight trunk and straight limbs, I think it's very pleasing on the eye.
Yeah.
And so that's led me down the road to looking deeper into that, I guess, might be the term to use, and exploring the possibilities. I've had in the last several years pieces that I've collected over 20 years ago. And they've been sitting around, and it's like, oh, it's a really cool piece of wood, but what am I going to do with it? You know, how do I make a piece of furnishing out of it? I want it to be functional as well as decorative and artsy. And I look at some of these pieces. on a regular basis, but nothing happens. And then one day you walk in and it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I've got this piece, and up in the shed over there, I've got this piece, and yeah, in the back room, I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can work with these pieces. And so that's part of the fascination and motivation and inspiration to keep working at it.
Yeah.
And like I say, it just keeps evolving is what has surprised me. Like I say, I'm still learning. I'm still figuring out ways to have wood pieces do things that I couldn't imagine 5 years ago. And it's like, where'd that come from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it fun. We didn't prepare well for this time of our life. And so I still have to work for a living. But even if I was so-called retired, I know I'd still be doing this just because...
Yeah.
I have right. a love for it. And that makes me think, kind of as a sidebar here, I remember when I was younger, say 40 years ago, we had, something that really solidified it, I guess, in my opinion. We had a piece of chair, actually, a willow chair, in a gallery in Madison, and there was numerous artists there, and they had a grand opening night, and the mm-hmm. artists were all there, and it really convinced me that the so-called artist or the artiste was kind of maybe nose up in the air and right. a little hoity-toity, if you can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
and so that's been kind of my opinion, but it's lightened since then. But what I discovered for myself was in these past, I'd say, 10 years, the way business has evolved and my imagination has evolved, I've come to realize that, no, that's not what being an artist is about.
Mm.
Being an artist, well, there's a saying, I think, puts it most simply, is a worker uses his hands, a craftsman uses his hands and his head, an artist uses his hands and his head and his heart.
Yeah.
And that's what I've come to realize. Oh, that's the difference. And mm-hmm. when you reach that point where the realization for me was, well, yeah, that's it. I realize there's a little piece of me goes into each piece that I produce. And I find myself, because of those factors, I'm fussier. You know, and I want it to be just nice as I can possibly do it. And, so, yeah, it's just been interesting to see that evolve as well. And the realization that, like, okay, I guess I can be an artist.
Yeah, you spend your whole life saying, oh, no, not that. Oh, no, not that. And you wake up one morning and you're like, oh.
Okay,
I suppose that's me.
I finally catch it. I get it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, seeing your work, I don't think there is anyone who would say, oh, that's not artistic, you know.
Right.
And I have seen some, like, photos of your earlier work, which when I think back to our conversation last year, to me, the way you described it, it felt a bit more utilitarian, right? Or bit more uniform, right? So we're making furniture and we're making it beautifully, but we're making it in a way that's repeatable.
Yeah.
Or something that people can come to expect.
Yeah.
And now I see your work and your pieces are truly one of a kind.
I mean, thank you.
You make mirrors, but each mirror is so different from the other one, right? I purchased a piece from you last year, actually, and more directly from your partner, Michelle. And one of the things that I appreciated about how she described the piece, because I have one of these, it's like a bark piece with mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
Like shelf mushrooms.
Yes, yes.
And the way that she described it, I found it very heartfelt. She described how you know, these mushrooms were not found on this piece of bark, but that you married the two. And I found that choice of words to be very intentional, and and I found it very sweet. And I think it speaks to the way that you treat each piece of, you know, each piece of the whole as an individual, and you really take care to make sure it fits well.
Yeah, so they complement each other. Because that's, yeah, and that takes reconsidering. Sometimes when I start out on a project, I have an idea in mind of where I want to go with it.
Yeah.
And during the process, it evolves into something else. And that's kind of fun.
Right.
So, yeah, it's, in a way, it's like you have to wait for the wood to speak to you, you know, to get it done right. So, but you mentioned my wife, Michelle. If you don't mind, I would like to spend a few minutes talking about her.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a really important part of the team.
Well, yes, and in some regards, she's the unsung hero here. We've been together for over 50 years, and through the process of homesteading, raising a family, having a business, I wouldn't be halfway through where we're at today without her. She has more energy than most two people combined. She never stops. She's very adept at, regardless of what the task is, what the job is, if what she was doing is done, she's got the sense to, oh, well, this needs to be done and I'll do that, you know, or I'll be busy with something and not ready for it, and, oh, well, rather than standing around here, I'll do this. And, yeah, so she keeps it all together. And I sometimes think, you know a little bit about her personality. She has, if you can believe people have an aura, she has a powerful one.
Yeah.
And people notice it, you know, and there's something in her personality, this openness, and it draws people to her.
Yeah.
And they open up to her. She's done that. I've watched it so many times through the years with little kids. She can take like a little crabby kid, and within minutes, she's got him doing whatever she wants.
Wow, so, I'm gonna have to take some notes.
So she's got, yeah, this personality, and she's a beautiful physically. She's a beautiful woman at even at 70 years old. She's a head turner. So, like I say, she's kind of, when we talk about business and creativity, she's allowed me to do this, and serves as inspiration to do it. So it's worked really well, and like I say, she's put in more than her 100%, and it's something you don't always see. With everything, like I say, since growing up, she's very capable. When I met her, she didn't know that much about gardening or building or living off the land, so or sustainably, and but she was a easy study and caught on, and she can do carpentry work and, you know, handle carpentry tools, power tools, and so she's been a heck of an asset. I've told people at times, the only reason I shine is because I stand in her light.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yeah, so I'd like to throw that in because that's my other three quarters.
Yeah. Well, and I did try this year to get her in the podcast recording studio.
Yeah, she's shy about that.
She's a little bashful, and that's okay. That's okay. But, you know, I think it's great that, you know, we have a little bit of Michelle in the room as well, and we have the opportunity to talk about what an amazing partner she is to you personally and professionally, because that's really important. I mean, you two are really a match set.
Yeah, I often think of that, and think of that like in marriages and relationships, man and a woman, whatever, is you each have your strong suits and weak suits, and if you get lucky, the other one's got you covered.
Exactly. Well, and this year, I mean, you two have how many years has it been since you've participated? I mean, how many years have you participated in the tour, the Winding Roads Art Tour?
4 years.
Okay.
We have.
Yeah. So it's been a few years here, and last year it was just the two of you. And the reason I say just the two of you is because in past years you've also featured the artwork of your daughter.
Yeah.
And last year was sort of an odd one in the sense that Elena wasn't able to make it.
Yeah.
But she's back this year.
Yes, she's going to be here this year.
So wonderful.
We're looking forward to that. And she's grown leaps and bounds with her business. What she's doing with jewelry just floors me. And it fits very well with what we do in our homestead there. Mm-hmm. It's nature-based.
Yeah.
So she, a lot of her jewelry incorporates flowers and leaves and things like that. Mm-hmm. And she does, like I say, some amazing work. How she's grown with her business just amazes me. Another lifetime ago, this goes back almost 50 years ago, I made jewelry.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I did that for 2 or 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't begin to achieve
sure.
where she's carried it. She's very business-minded besides. And mm-hmm. So it's neat to see. It strikes me with Elena, I don't recall seeing that artsy expression in her as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Our other daughter, Marissa, she has always been that way and is today yet. And but so it was kind of surprising to see her get into this and how she's excelled at it. It's pretty rewarding as a parent. And I sometimes think about how it turned out that way, and I think I realize we gave our kids that creative aspect, building a homestead, and we built it all ourselves.
Right.
The kids were incorporated. It was a time when if they weren't doing chores, which wasn't that much of a day, they were off playing. Outdoors.
Right.
You know, it's largely outdoors, and they were playing in the creek and in the mud and off in the woods.
Uh-huh.
And, so I think that maybe set the stage initially.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it feels good. It's like, okay, I think we did a fair job of bringing these kids up. And associated with that, it also, I believe, gave them critical thinking skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanics brain.
Yeah, like cause and effect. And
You know, they'd be in the workshop with me when they were little kids, and of course there's hammers and utility knives and stuff, and it's like at 3-4 years old they were using them, and if they cut themselves, it's like they learned something from
it.
And it's like, yeah, you're all the better for it.
yeah. No major injuries,
and
here we go. We're healing, and we're off to the races again. Yeah. I think that is such a valuable practice as a parent. And I see that in so many parents in this area. You know, I think the pendulum swung in a really intense direction towards like protection.
Yes.
Of children, right?
Yeah.
And a feeling that the world isn't safe, or a feeling that, you know, if kids aren't being watched 24/7, that like something, you know, terrible is going to happen. And certainly, I want to say, terrible things do sometimes happen.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And that's not to dismiss those cases, but so often, I think we underestimate what kids can do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We underestimate how independent young children can be and how creative they can be.
Yeah. Yeah, and the learning they do, I think a lot of times, knowledge without context is pretty hollow. So I think by letting those kids experience those things, it gives it context so it sticks with them.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, they know not to do that again. You know?
Right. Yeah. Well, what I think is really cool, you know, last year was my first year participating with Winding Roads.
Yeah.
And I was able to drive to all of the different sites and see the really vast variety that we have to offer at this tour. And it's really remarkable. But one of the things that struck me about your site, your home, is the fact that not only do you open up your studio and you have your pieces on display, but you open up your home as a work of art and as a work of craftsmanship, which I think is just, it's a very generous offering, right? Because you wouldn't have to do that, right? Yeah. You know, like you have this really lovely kind of sprawling space where you live, and it would be totally legit for you to just say, like, here's the studio, here's the stuff. No. Thank you very much, right? But I think one of the reasons people love to come to your site and come to your home is to see the beauty that you and Michelle have created in that little hollow. And your kids come and help.
Do they participate
as well?
Yes.
You know, even if they're not, you know, Alina selling jewelry,
right?
Your kiddos come and assist as well.
Yeah.
So it's a whole family affair.
You know, and that stems from. It started, I don't know, quite a few years back. There's a lot of, I'll call them homesteaders in this area.
Yeah.
Young people moving in and doing their own thing, trying to make a living and build a homestead. And we had, on different occasions, someone like that, we might not even know, and get a phone call and say, hey, I'm so-and-so, and we're here and we're building a homestead and we heard about you and what you've done with your place and wondering if we could come and pick your brain some. And as we did that, the more we did it, the more it struck Shell and I that isn't it our duty as human beings to share that and the joy we get from, if we can serve as a catalyst to inspire someone, then, you know, the human experience should have more of that. And I think we see less and less of that all the time. And so it's, I guess, an effort to reverse that trend and pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, that's part of why we open up our place to it is just, you know, when I build things, the paycheck when it sells is important, but what really gives me fulfillment is when I see that smile and that joy the person is getting from it. It's like, yes, if I can just, like, say, serve as a catalyst to inspire someone in a good direction that I believe is a good direction, I feel like, well, I need to do that. And this is, we're people. We should share those things with each other.
Yeah. I have been, this isn't a new idea, but it's one that has kind of come back into my consciousness, really, and it's that of the, like, a person serving as a window and a mirror.
Oh, okay.
And it was described a lot, you know, when you see the first female astronaut.
Okay.
Right. You know, this, it's difficult to picture yourself in something, in a profession or a role, where you've never seen anyone like you before.
Okay, yeah.
And so that person serves as a window into what's possible, as well as a mirror reflecting kind of your own identity or your lived experience back at you and saying, like, oh, yeah, like, we're similar. And I think about that idea, and I think about this idea of responsibility to sort of the next generation or to folks who want to move in the direction that you've moved in.
Right.
It feels like you take it as your duty, as your responsibility to kind of be that window and mirror for people.
Yeah, and that's
yeah.
That strikes me curious. I've done some things that didn't make practical sense in giving and doing things for other people and stuff. I've even had friends like Rakowski. How dumb can you be? Why are you doing that? But there's, I guess as I've gotten older, and this happened, these projects happened largely when I was in anywhere from my late 50s and through my 60s, from doing a massive stonework at Kickapoo schools for nothing, just because I could.
Right.
Working with the Driftless School.
Mm-hmm.
I built a cabin for him. I took a year and a half out of my life to do it. No payment or anything, just I believed in what they were doing and saw an opportunity to help them get to where they wanted to go, and so did it. Like I say, I guess in a very simple form, I could say there's a saying, the first third of your life you learn, the second third of your life you earn, the third part of your life you return. So I feel like, I guess I as I've gotten older, I feel like, yeah, I want to give something back to community and the human experience. So like I say, it's been odd, and again, Michelle let me get away with it, you know, and she was one of them saying, this ain't too smart. But I have no regrets. It is what it is, and like I say, it's just something I felt grew on me with age, and I think it is part of the aging process that at some point in your life you do feel that way. And you know, and it helps explain, you go to some organization get together, whether it's a meeting or a picnic or whatever, if you watch, you start picking out all these people that play their part to make it happen, and you know, and it's volunteer stuff, and it just makes me realize, oh yeah, lots of people are doing this in their own way. You know, they have this ability or this interest, and here's an opportunity, and they go, and yeah, I'll help out with this. And that's a beautiful thing. That's and like I say, we need more of that in the human experience.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think there's also one thing that I find challenging, I'll say, when I walk into your home, for instance, and I look at this house that you've built from the ground up. And I know, you know, like last year we talked all about how, you know, we built the one cabin, lived in it for a while, fire took it, okay, we gotta live in tents and we gotta build this next one. You know, when I go to your home and I kind of walk through and I see this beautiful space, it almost is intimidating.
Oh,
in a sense.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, it's because it is so beautiful, and because now, I don't know if you would say that it's finished, but it's like I wasn't able to see the years and the decades of development, right?
Yeah.
I'm seeing this home that's standing here and that is so beautiful and that I know that you have built with your own hands. And so that, from the perspective of like someone who aspires, it feels intimidating, right? Like,
okay.
I could never build something, you know, I could never do something like this. I could never, you know, that window is just so wonderful. And like, I would never be able to conceive of something of that. And so what I wonder is where do you start? Or where do you suggest other people start? Like when you give advice to folks who come to you and they say, I want to homestead, or I want to have a small holding, or I want to, you know.
Well, I think
first off,
everybody's going to do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending upon their resources, that's definitely something that comes into play.
Right.
But I guess it evolves.
Mm.
So you start out and you think you've got everything figured out how it's going to go.
Yeah.
And you just keep adapting along the way and adjusting, mm-hmm. you know, and okay, let's see, can't quite do it this way, but we could do it this way, and yeah, that'll work. And you'd have to be, I don't think you want to get too hung up on, here's the plan in detail, sure, period.
Yeah.
You have to have some flexibility in there to save the torture.
Right. Well, because if you start with $2,000 of a, you're like, okay, well, I have to do all of this.
Yeah.
Right. It's, you know, you're going to burn out. Does your process, like when you think back on your process and like the way that your home developed over the years, does it feel like an inchworm? Does it feel like layers, like sedimentary layers? Like how does that feel for you? Does it feel like a spiral?
It's, well, slow crawl a lot of times.
Sure.
You know, it basically took us, the house we live in, and there's still a few things that aren't done on it. It took almost 30 years. We did it without a mortgage, piece by piece, when we had the time and money to do it. So I know that's too torturous for a lot of people, but neither of us ever wanted to be in debt. So it was what seemed to work for us.
Right.
Not easy. You can certainly get frustrated, but if you really want it, and that's a key thing, is in a relationship where you're dealing with someone else in an endeavor like this, you both better want it pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're probably not going to make it.
Yeah, right.
So it worked for us, because Shell, actually in some of the early years, she would have girlfriends say, you know, why do you put up with this, living in a tent? You know, and it'd make her think, yeah, why do I do that? But then she realized, oh, no, because we have this dream. This is what we want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she had to bring herself back to, like, no, this is about me just as much as it's about Ken.
Yeah.
So, like I say, it's not for everybody, but it worked for us. And, you know, the creativeness and the putting the pieces together in the house has just been a slow process, mm-hmm. happening. When one of the philosophies we had is, we don't want to do something temporary,
mm-hmm.
because I've done that in the past in my life, and temporary can turn out kind of permanent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, let's not do this until we do it the way we want it.
Right.
Let's not just scab this together because we want it done. We'll live without it until we can do it the way we want it.
Yeah.
And so if you can adopt that kind of an attitude, it makes it easier. And there's, I don't know the words to describe it. There's also some kind of fulfillment in being able to conduct your life that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, I don't know the words to express that, but it's fulfilling, I guess it would be one word I could use, and a learning experience, and a growing experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to that thing, you know, you're an adult the rest of your life. No, you continue to grow, not physically, right, maybe, but mm-hmm. mentally. At least I would hope you would continue to grow and change and evolve. And that's the beauty of living a life.
Mm.
So, it's, you know, I find myself at 74 years old, I'm almost 75 now, reflecting back, you know, there's times with our homestead, I think back on what everything we've done there, and it's like, how in the hell did we have the time and energy to do that?
Yeah.
You know, we're both kind of workaholics, so that helps. You know, being self-employed, I never thought of days as 8-hour days.
Right.
You have so much stuff you're doing, it, however long it takes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And weekends, it's like, well, why is a weekend any different than a week?
Sure.
A work weekday, you know? It's like, so that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't do it anymore, but I mean, I used to be able to put in 10, 12-hour days,
right.
You know, and at times even more than that, and
mm-hmm.
Basically enjoyed it. I do like physical activity.
Yeah.
Our lifestyle, our business, everything is has some fairly physical components to it,
right.
Which I'm starting to notice now at 74. It's like...
Certain things you maybe would rather not.
Yeah, it's like this is getting to be a whole lot more like work and a lot less like fun anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the whole aging process and living a life mm-hmm. that your experience and your perception of it change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, I find when you got more years behind you than you got ahead of you, start looking at things differently,
mm-hmm.
and things that used to be important maybe aren't important now, and things that weren't front and center now are front and center.
Right. Well, and by the same token that you accumulate and you learn and you gain that wisdom, there are also things that you can decide to say, hey, you know, I've held this for a long time. I'm going to let go of it, you know?
Yes, I've been experiencing that.
Right.
Yeah, down to even what just came to mind is last year we went with all our kids and two grandkids. We went up to the Boundary Waters and canoed back in and
beautiful.
Stayed for 6 days, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And typically I would be kind of one of the lead guys, you know.
Yeah.
That's carrying the canoe and, you know, making sure everything's done. And
yeah.
I'm not physically so capable of that anymore to see my son and my
daughter.
My daughters, yeah, to pass the torch on to them,
yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, yeah, I kind of just kind of back off of this. This is,
yeah.
You know, and so that's been interesting. I can't say that it's embarrassing or anything like that. It's just been different to start looking at life that way.
Imagine it's a little bittersweet.
Yeah. And it's made me realize again things that are important in your life and family and friends,
mm-hmm.
I think, become more and more important as I go through the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
The value of them and the joy that we get from them seems more and more. And that's mm-hmm. a good thing, and I think you know, if you think of legacy, I think they're your legacy.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting. Like I say, it's hit me the last year or two particularly. I've got some health issues that have slowed me down, and so mm-hmm. I suspect that plays into it. But
mm-hmm.
Also, it's just that time of my life, and it feels good.
Yeah,
I'm all right with it.
That's wonderful to hear. Yeah, not everybody has that experience of acceptance and reflection with this time of life. And so I think that's very cool.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So as we come back around to the tour itself,
yes.
You, Michelle, Alina, are going to be right outside Viola. I have to say, I always forget to do my homework on which tour stop you are.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure
for
either.
For the podcast. Well, anyway, you can look up the Workhouse keys and find them on the in the valley just outside of Viola, between Viola and Viroqua. We have quite a few tour stops in the Viola area, which is very cool.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And come and see Ken's work. Come in and chat with Michelle. See the beautiful Gorkowski home and see Alina's jewelry. I know last year people were asking where she was.
Yes, yes.
They were so disappointed that she wasn't able to make it. So it's wonderful that she's going to be back, and I'll look forward to seeing her work in person as
well.
All
right, good.
Yeah. Any last words, Ken, as we conclude this session here?
Just that it, we came to here 40 years ago, and it was really easy to become home.
Yeah.
We didn't know when we purchased land here and moved here that so many things that are important in our life had already been birthed here and developing here. The entrepreneurship here, the back to the land kind of movement, that drawing that kind of people, the beauty of the land itself. I have a saying, and I want to make a sign of it. I had a sign, but it's sitting in a cabin that I built. And this goes back, reflecting back, looking at being here 40 years, is when we first moved here. The saying is, we came to the land to create, and over time, the land and nature created us. And I feel very much so that's very much what happened to us. So a short way to express what's happened with us through all of this.
All of the learning and the returning.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Ken.
Thank you for having me.